Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with actor Anna Maria Larsson. Anna Maria is here as part of the ensemble company of Smell of the Kill, the terrifically funny black comedy now playing at the Players Theater in Sarasota, Florida. This is Anna Maria's first acting job in Sarasota, but she has a long career in soap operas and in theater in her native Colombia. It is, of course, a challenge for this exuberant, charming, over-the-top, quick-speaking woman to adapt. Listen to this almost childlike in her delight woman describe how she managed to become the actress that she has become, how she managed to overcome her father's concern that only drug addicts and people who had nothing else to do became actors. And listen to her talk about how she has to slow down in order to be understood by this American audience. It's a delightful interview. So hang on. Here come the show. Is about being who you really are. It is about understanding that so many things that can happen to us in our early life can derail us from being the person we really are. It's about saying there is a person who you really are, that there is a person who you would naturally become if nothing seriously derailed you, nothing gave you the idea that something or some things about you were not okay. It's not rocket science. We all know that children require the approval, care, nurturing, concern, attention, affection, love of their parents in order to thrive. I don't know how many of you are aware of an experience that happened to orphans in, I believe it was World War II. These were infants who were cared for by nurses. They all had their little crib, and they were all fed and changed and lived in a, you know, carefully controlled environment. All of their physical needs were taken care of. They were not, however, held, talked to, played with, indulged, or nurtured in the way that human children need, well, I wanted to say usually are, I know quite a few are not, but in the way that human children require. The end result of this is that they were very slow to develop, in many cases didn't develop at all, and suffered all kinds of developmental weaknesses. The nurses who cared for them were not cold or cruel. They simply did not understand the importance of giving a child the sense that it is cared for, loved, valued, safe. It is these things that allow for development. So many children, many too many children, and although my private practice as a psychotherapist is admittedly a small sample, it seems to me that many too many do suffer from the absence of appreciation of who they really are. So many children are raised by parents who, for their own reasons, almost certainly having to do with their own upbringing, have really strong feelings about what is good and what is bad in a child. What behaviors, what qualities, what attributes, what gender identification, what interests, what career their child must be. I'm not talking here about cruelty or abuse, even, although unfortunately that happens also much too much and leads to similar results. That is, results in the child not being who they really are, not growing up to be the person they were meant to be. But it doesn't have to be trauma or abuse. Simply discouragement, simply criticism, simply, no, you don't want to do that. No, that's not what you think. No, you're not really sad. It can be the rolling of the eyes when a child demonstrates a particular behavior. They laugh too loud. They're sloppy eaters. They are fascinated by reading or drawing or sports. They have behaviors that are not typical of the gender that they were born. Parents can manipulate children in all kinds of ways, in all kinds of manners, letting them know that what they are, what they think, how they act, what they're drawn to is not okay. And many, too many children suffering this kind of discouragement attempt to deny what it is that they naturally are. So they stifle that laugh that seemed to bring criticism or neglect or teasing. They first begin to ignore the activity that drew them. They read less. They leave their crayons. They don't talk about the sport that is compelling them. They begin to try to be the child the parent seems to want. And that means not being the child they actually are. The end result of this is that children who have succeeded too well in denying these things grow up, in fact, forgetting that they have these things. They lose access. In my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, which is about why you can't make the changes in your life you might want to make, I talk about this in the following way. I call the qualities that stand in for the qualities that we really are our cover story. So many of these children who had to deny who they really were come into life demonstrating only those qualities that seem to go down well with the family. Those qualities constitute their cover story. These things are true of them, it's just not the whole story, it's not the whole truth. The qualities which they denied and then consequently forgot, I say these have gone undercover. And while so many of us live in this way without access to parts of ourselves that have been denied and gone undercover, these things have not disappeared. They are still there. So the price that is paid for having to deny something essential about yourself, having forgotten it, well, there are many prices for it. One of them is, quite simply, that you lose access to that thing which might have brought you pleasure and joy and fulfillment and maybe even success. You lose it. Well, it's not gone, but you don't have access to it, and so for all intents and purposes, you have lost it. This would be enough, but it's not all the price you pay. When qualities go undercover, while we are not consciously aware of them and don't have access to them, we have the sense that there's something wrong with us, something flawed about us, this thing which we had to deny. We have the sense that there's something there that's not right. That feels awful. And too many people are living with that sense that something about them is flawed or weak or not good. This is an unfortunate way to be living your life. And I need to say here that it's not always the family that causes this, although I think that families take the lion's share of the credit for that, but schools, peers, bullying will make a child feel that they are not okay, something about them. They may not even know what it is. They may not even know what it is they're supposed to be hiding undercover. They just know there's something about them that's not okay. Religious organizations, cultural beliefs, all of these things, if you are not the prototype, then you come to know, or to believe at least, that there's something wrong with you, and you grow up demonstrating a cover story, the one that you hope will work to bring you attention, affection, the things we all need, and you hide undercover the qualities which didn't work or which brought, as I have said, consequences that were unpleasant, sometimes even dangerous. So the Lynn Show is about making this point, and about saying that if this happened to you, it may not be too late to recover some of those things which you had to hide undercover. And if you're curious about that, you want to talk to me about that, you can go up on my website where you can find a button that says email me. You can click on it and email me any question that you might have, and I will be happy to respond. You can get a copy of the book, When You Can, You Will. You can even listen to the first chapter of the book. I'm reading it online. You can listen to all the interviews I've ever done, including the one I'm doing today, which is with the exuberant, as I have said now several times, Anna Maria Lawson. For my shows, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do this because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Fortunately, many of the people I interview had families who recognized their talent, their desire, their interest, their curiosity, their compulsion, their passion for whichever art it is. They recognized that they were drawn to music or dance or painting or writing and encouraged it, said, yes, that is who you are, and boy, it's terrific. And those lucky ones had a much easier ride. Unfortunately, a number of people who had these natural leanings early on have families who discourage them for one reason or another. And there are dozens of reasons why a family might discourage a child who was drawn to being an actor or a painter or a musician or a writer. The most common is the concern that the child will not be able to make a living. But there are lots of other reasons. Everybody in our family went to this college. All the men in our family are in the military. All the women in our family are nurses or teachers. No, you don't want to do that. That kind of person doesn't come from our kind of family. There are as many reasons why a family might discourage a child as there are families. But some of those children refuse to be discouraged. And the woman whose interview I am playing today is one of those. This is Anna Maria Lawson, who, even while she accepted her father's insistence that she not choose acting as a career, kept it, as she says, on the back burner. Actually, I think she kept it in her heart. And a combination of circumstance and her drive and passion and resolve allowed her to become what she clearly is. And so now I'm going to let you hear that story from the charming, the delightful Anna Maria Lawson. I'm here with Anna Maria Lawson, and I'm talking to Anna Maria because she is part of the ensemble cast of Smell of the Kill, which is at the Players.
I know.
Yes. Okay, good. So I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. And clearly, the art to which you have given, are giving your life is the art of acting, is that right?
Yes, acting, totally. Yeah, I went to acting school in Colombia in the 80s with Fred Flintstone.
Okay, hold on. We'll get there. So I only ask one question, and it is, do you remember the very first moment in your life when acting seemed like something you would want to do? To play act, to you're interested in stories, you saw movies, anything that that started this for you?
It was like in the back of my mind, but I kind of buried it because it looked like an impossible, and my dad think, you know, that's for drug addicts and people that don't have anything else to do, so it was in the back burner.
Okay, but wait, what I want to know is how did it get in the back burner? What did you see? Or what made you think that you might want to be an actor, but you couldn't actually do it?
I guess when I was going to the movies, and I love films, I love movies, I'm like, I really get transported, and that was my thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I would love to do that, but nah, it's an impossible.
So when did you start going to the movies? How old would you have been?
Like 15, 16 years old, something
right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So the movies... it's not unusual, actually. You know, the movies turn on a lot of kids, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you found yourself drawn to that. You were transported. You loved it.
Oh, yeah.
But you understood that Daddy, no, he wouldn't like it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, he told me, right, you know, when I need to pick a career, he's like, no, acting, no, you'll starve. Forget about it.
So did you say, when he said you need to pick a career, you said, well, what about acting?
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, and he told you absolutely
you
not.
You need something that will give you a job.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how old were you when you had this conversation with your dad?
When I had to pick, you know, what I was going to go for when I was going to finish high school, I had to pick a career, and I couldn't think about anything besides acting, so I'm like, eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
Yeah, because none of it made any difference at all, right?
I know,
it wasn't going to be acting, it didn't matter.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Right, so what did you choose?
I went for advertising. But then advertising had one class that was a production. So we have to do stuff, you know, with the camera for the TV commercial.
Right.
You know, the whole advertising campaign had to have like radio and billboards, and then there was the TV part. Mm-hmm. So of course I was like directing, writing, acting, everything.
Mm-hmm. Were you in school?
Yeah, in college, yeah.
Yes, so you majored in advertising?
Yes, finished. Mm-hmm.
Right, and one of the classes was production?
TV production.
TV production. Through the back door, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so were you in any plays? Did you study acting at all?
Yes. So, I finished advertising, and then I did an internship. While I was in college, I did an internship. I was a director's assistant in a director that directed soap operas and TV.
Was that part of your...
That was part of my advertising. I needed to do an internship.
Very clever.
So, yeah, but it was not planned. God had it for me because I was like, with this guy being his assistant, because I was going to learn to do TV production.
Right.
And you won't believe it, but a couple times the actors didn't show up. Because it was like a cheapy production. Because he had just come from Mexico and he was brand new and he could only get like... something that was not that important, so the actors sometimes didn't show up.
Yeah, well, and then if they got another job, they weren't going to do this one, right?
Yeah, so he was like, okay, so you're going to be the lady today in the store. He's like, oh, what? You're going to be so-and-so? And I'm like, what, me? So I had to obey. So I was like, okay, I'll do this part, I'll do that. And then he told me, you should be an actress. You have the talent. He's like, really? That's what I thought my whole life. So he said, go to school. Don't be one of those actresses that think they're actresses and they never study. So go to school, and I promise you, when you graduate, I'll give you a job.
Oh, my God.
And he did.
Well, wait a second. This is really, you're right. This was just came to you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you study? Where did you study?
I went to, they had just opened up a brand new acting academy that it was kind of like focused to TV, to acting for TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we also did theater and all that, but it was more focused to TV.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner and the director of the academy was a very well-known director. And somehow he liked me, you know, he thought I was a very good student. I was always like first and I was all, I mean, for getting there first.
No, I understand.
Doing all
you
my
were,
homework.
Yeah, right.
And he just started sending me to, they would start calling the academy asking for very young actors that they could do very little lines and they were messed up. And he started like recommending me and I started getting little jobs and then they got bigger and bigger and bigger and I didn't stop in 15 years.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. So you got out of school,
mm-hmm.
and then you did this thing, the TV acting thing,
yeah.
right? Okay,
mm-hmm.
good. So did you tell your dad?
Oh, at that point I was paying for my own bills. I paid to go to that school. Yeah,
so
I was like selling clothes, selling sandwiches, selling jewelry. Yeah.
Whatever you needed to do to make the money, right?
Yeah, I was already 20-something, so I did it my way. Yeah.
Okay, so did he ever comment?
No. My mother once in a while will say, when are you going to get a real job? Yeah, so, but I had a job all the time. Now that I'm here...
Wait.
Okay.
Now I do actually want to know some of those jobs. What did you do?
Oh, Colombia is a soap opera factory.
Ah!
So thank God. I was going to tell you I realize how privileged I was back then because I could pay a mortgage acting.
Wow.
It was amazing, yeah. Yeah, I struggled... Doing soap operas and theater and whatever. I mean, like classes, workshops, I will... Basically, totally acting. Everything, it was everything acting. And I made a living with that 15 years nonstop.
My God.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Right, and you didn't even know how amazing it was.
I know, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is all in Colombia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when did you come to the United States?
In 2000. I had a son. I had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was 8, my father asked me if I wanted to have the citizenship or the residency to live here because he was a citizen. And you have the right to petition your...
Wait. Where did you have this child?
In Colombia.
Oh, okay.
And I was back then. I was acting. I was a single mom. And my father asked me if I wanted to get the residency for United States, and I was like, no, I'm fine here, and I don't see why. But he said, yeah, let's just do it because it takes a long time and you never know. Things can change. And actually, it took 8 years. And when my son was 8 years old, I kept thinking that he might have a better future in this country.
Yeah.
So I gave up acting. I gave up everything. It was very hard. And I moved to United States in 2000. And I just did something else. I became a hairdresser.
Where did you move to?
To West Palm Beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you became a hairdresser?
Yeah, because I needed something that will, to pay the, you know, the mortgage. And I couldn't start from zero acting. And there was not that many jobs in West Palm Beach. It was close to Miami, but still there's not enough jobs to make a living.
Right.
And I couldn't just risk it to just go on auditions. And I had to pay a rent. I had a car. I have to put my
son. You had a kid. Right. You had to take care of that. Okay, so how long did that last?
Until last year. So I did my jobs. I was a hairdresser and I was in charge of the theater ministry in my church.
The theater ministry? You had a church with a theater ministry?
Well, I was going to a church and the pastor told me, we should do theater here. I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, people understand so much more a message when you do, when you act.
But again, the pastor came to you and said, why don't you do theater here?
I can't remember who said it first.
Oh, you mean you may have said it?
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter.
It was an idea.
It doesn't matter if whose time had come.
Well, maybe him. He heard that I was in. Maybe somebody mentioned, oh, I know her. She was an actress. Because some people, it was a Spanish church. So people that just came from Colombia, they were like, oh, you were in soap operas. I know you.
Yeah,
maybe.
Right.
And then I think it was that way. He called me, were you like soap opera
star?
Actress?
Right.
Something. I'm like, yeah. I never call it that way. Oh, let's do some sketches, you know, people will understand better the message. So I started putting plays together there, so I was in charge of that.
So putting plays together, what does that mean?
Oh, I'm thinking in Spanish. I still haven't found the word in English, how you say, when you just make, you know,
you produce it.
Produce a play. Yeah,
so
that's what I mean.
So what plays did you do?
Well, I just wrote it.
So you wrote the play?
Yeah, I wrote it. Yeah.
Yes, right. You wrote the play. And then did you act in the play?
Yeah, I had to because, a lot of the people were not actors, so I have to do everything, the lights, everything, the scenography, everything.
Yeah.
People were busy and I was in charge of that. So I will write, for example, for Mother's Day, if the pastor wanted to have something special, or for Easter, or for...
So did they all have a religious theme?
Yeah, most of them were like that. Most of them were about that. Or, for example, if he was going to preach about, generosity, or love, or tolerance, then I'll do some little situation there, like 5-minute thing, and people were... They were so receptive to that, and they will understand the message like this.
Yes.
Yeah, so that worked pretty good, yeah.
So, you had a lot of training as an actor, but did you have training as a writer, or you just know how to do it?
No, I didn't have any training. I just had to, so I came up with it.
I think that's right.
I kind of like to do it, but I haven't had a training, to be honest, in writing, yeah.
So, have you thought about writing anything else?
Yeah, I like to, yeah, yes. Yeah, I like it.
What might you write?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I've been thinking that in Sarasota there's not Spanish theater.
No.
They might be a good opportunity to start something, maybe.
What a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or to become part of something else that you could add the Spanish theater to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, maybe. So it's kind of hard to find plays and all that. And sometimes, just to adapt them to whatever it's going on now or whatever people need.
Right. Okay, so how long did you do the church theater?
Oh, since like 2002 until 2014. I just moved a year ago here.
Oh, my God.
To Bradenton.
Okay, so the whole time that you were there, you were being a hairdresser.
Yeah.
And producing theater for the church.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's right, right?
And I did a couple times I was like in a couple productions, like theater productions there.
So you auditioned occasionally.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just did two theater plays with on-stage theater. It was a group and an audition and I got it. I'm like, ooh, okay.
But what was it Spanish language as well?
No, it was in English. Yeah. Actually, it was my first time in English, and it was so hard because...
Tell me.
It is hard. I mean, talking to you, Sissy, but when I'm in the theater, I have to be sure that people are going to understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not only my pronunciation, but my enunciation and inflections, they're different.
Yes.
Yeah, poor Pam. Now, I feel for her on top of everything. I didn't understand a word.
Well, and also, you speak very fast.
I know.
Yes. And that's cultural, isn't it? I mean,
No, it's me.
It's you.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to slow down. I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, on stage, probably.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting opportunity for you, exercise for you to practice, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So the two things you did when you were still in West Palm,
uh-huh.
they were also in English.
Well, in church it was in Spanish.
No.
Oh, the other two plays, right. Yeah, they were yeah. in English.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. So somehow you managed to pull that off.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. I have to work double. I have to go home and pronounce it and do it again and do it slowly.
Yeah. Do you use a tape recorder or something?
I just found like a great app. It's called Line Learner.
Line Learner?
It's an app. It's really good. I just found it now, but back then I just...
No. What does it do?
Anything. Yes, I record myself in the cell phone, and I would just...
Listen
to myself, and yeah. okay. And then when I went back to rehearsal, the director would tell me, okay, that's better.
Yeah, that's a real challenge, mm-hmm. I think, because how we speak is such a reflex. You're not thinking about how you speak.
I know.
You know, none of us is thinking about how we speak. And so to have to be aware of how you're speaking at the same time that you're remembering
your
lines and the blocking and listening to the other actors, this is a real challenge.
Yeah, it is very hard. I have to work double, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. at least double.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think that's very brave of you, actually.
Especially the inflections. It's like I put... The accent, not the accents, but like...
Can you give an example?
I don't know. It's like... I don't know. I think that's called inflections. Like, I will say a sentence with like a different melody, if you
can call it that way, than an American person. Cadence. That's the word for it. It's a different cadence.
Oh,
Yeah. So, wow.
Yeah, like if you watch Sofia Vergara in Modern Family, you see that she speaks... with a different inflection and that's exactly how I speak. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I speak exactly the same.
Well, that's fine. Unless...
Just for my country. That's
I see. But there's nothing wrong with the way you speak.
Uh-huh.
Except that on stage, it might be more difficult to understand and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, I just want to say this again. So while you're immersing yourself in the character and remembering your lines and trying to be in character,
mm-hmm.
and pay attention to what everybody else is saying and where you're supposed to be standing, and at the same time have to be thinking about how quickly you're speaking.
Yes. No, I do speak slow in the play.
Well, we all want to hear that. We all want to come and hear that. So let's talk about the play.
Mm-hmm.
The play is The Smell of the Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me about the play.
Oh my goodness, it's a dark comedy.
Yeah.
It's about three wives that they are unhappy in their marriages, and it's a dinner party and everything happens in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys are outside, you only hear them but you don't see them. So they're being like, you know, not nice to them, asking for stuff and...
The guys are being...
Yeah, the guys, yeah. And then we just like chit-chatting and pretending nothing's going wrong, but little by little we start revealing how our marriages are not that great, and then we start drinking. And then, you know, little by little we start like opening up and we're very unhappy with these three. And there's an accident that they get locked in a meat locker.
Yeah, I think maybe you don't want to tell anyone.
I know. We have to decide what we're going to do.
Do about it. Right.
It is very funny.
Yes.
Super funny. And the three characters are so different.
Tell me the difference.
Oh, like the owner of the house is Nikki, and she's like very strong. She's a businesswoman. She's very, her health self-esteem is very high, and she's very well-dressed and you know, very, she has everything under control. The other one's a little bit weird, you know, like The other character is like more weak than Nikki. It's Debra.
Mm-hmm.
But she used to be strong, but her husband kind of like put her down.
Mm-hmm.
And Molly, mine, is in another world. She's silly. She says a lot of stuff that don't make sense. Thank God, because that is perfect for me. She's super silly. She's innocent. It's a very different character that it could look like dumb, like she's the dumb,
right?
But she's not dumb. And at the end of the story, she was the bad one. And she's a little bit, and she likes to drink, and she like says things out of context.
Yeah. So you feel like this is a good role for you.
I
have a sense that you really, I mean, obviously you're really getting off in it, right? And you were a wonderful choice. I'm assuming that this character wasn't written Spanish.
No. You know, it's funny. I've always forget to talk to Pam. At the very beginning, I was telling her, oh, why did you pick me? You know, I was even scared to go to the audition because I thought, this is not a Spanish character,
right.
So they're not going to pick me. Because it's three American women, and the way it's written with the... I'll call you back. Spanish person
will never say that.
I'm like, oh, it's been very hard because she talks very different, the English, the way I speak it.
The character does.
Yeah, the character, yeah. So I've always wanted to ask Pam, are you going to make her Spanish or something? But we, at the end of the day, we never talked about it. I better stay quiet and just learn my lines.
Well, so it was so brave of you to audition.
Yeah, I thought, you know...
What have you got to lose?
The only thing here is theater. There's no TV, anything like that going on, so I'm going to try. Let's see. And I prepare myself really good, like a couple months before. I saw it in the website. I was just researching for theaters, and I thought, oh, auditions. And I bought the book, and I read it, and I'm like, oh, I love this, and I love Molly. Please, God, give it to me. So I just show up. The worst that could happen is that they say, no, you speak too funny.
Yeah.
But no, she told me she loves my accent. Like, really? That's crazy.
I think she probably loved the whole package of you.
Oh, really?
You know, this is probably what she saw for the character, you know?
Yeah.
It's lovely. Mm-hmm. So have you auditioned anywhere else in town?
No, I just started. This is my first one.
Yeah. Oh, well, good. Oh, my God, it's your first one and you got it.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I could not believe it when she called me. I could not believe it. It's like, really? Are you sure? Yeah.
So I'm assuming that you will audition some more around town, right?
Yeah.
They try and bring films here to make films here.
I've heard that there's not that much going on.
There's not that much.
Incentives and I don't know what else, and they're all in Georgia, Atlanta, and let's see. Yeah.
So you couldn't travel?
Yes, I could, but I don't know. I don't want to travel too much because I just got married 4 years ago, and I don't want to leave my poor hobbycito alone.
No.
And I have two little dogs that are like my babies.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go away for a long time.
No, I understand.
Yeah, I'm not 20 anymore.
Yeah,
I know. But let's see, if there's a good opportunity, I will. And my husband totally supports me in everything.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah, that's good.
Lovely. All right, so let's just tell everybody when the play is running. The play is running from...
The
27th, of this month, which is April. April 27th.
April 27th to May 8th.
To May 8th. So it's not a very long run. So if you... Yeah, so if you want to see... Molly, you need to run right out and get your tickets.
Oh, yes.
Right,
silly
right.
Molly. She's super silly.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's perfect for you.
Yes.
For you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so I ask another question.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you spent a lot of your life as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you were being a hairdresser,
you know,
you were still... connected to the theater a lot of that time, right?
Mm-hmm,
right.
Yeah.
And so could you just think for a minute of what it's felt like to be an actor, to give your life to acting, to make that so important in your life?
You just can't help it. It's like a virus. Once you get it, it's like, and then, you know, when you're not doing it, you go to theater, you're like, you know, the smell of the theater, and I wish I could go back there and tell them you were so great and hug them. You just can't, I don't know. You were born for that. I think so.
Oh, I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think so. When you have that, I don't know. God put it on me. He wants me to be an actress because he gave it to me now. So I don't know. It just I just can't get away from it. And I love to go to films and just dream with what's going on. And I get into the story and I imagine how I would have done this character, how I learned from that actress to do that and things like that. I just can't get rid of it. It's part of me. Yeah.
And that's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Gloria. Oh,
thank you.
I can't wait to see Molly.
Alrighty.
I just can't get away from it. It's like a virus. Once you get it, you can't get rid of it. This is what it sounds like when a person is talking about who they really are. Because, of course, that would be the truth. You can't get rid of who you are. And when you listen to Anna Maria, you can hear it. You can hear when she says, so I put it on the back burner because my father didn't approve, you know. But it never was gone. It was never away. She never got rid of it. She believes it was given to her to do, that she has to do it because God gave it to her. That's what it feels like when you are yourself, that there isn't an option to being other than yourself. So I interview people like Anna Maria, as I said, so that you can hear what it sounds like, but also so you can ask yourself, is this how I feel about my life? That I can't imagine doing anything else, that this is who I am and what I do is connected to who I am. And you hear the joy and the energy and the passion and the delight. Is that how you're feeling about your life? And if it is not how you're feeling about your life, are you thinking that you'd like to feel that way about your life? Are you thinking that it might be possible for you to feel that way about your life? Are you remembering what I said about the fact that the thing that would give you this rush, the thing that would make you feel, I was meant to do this, to be this? And it's not just about a career. It is not only activities, behaviors, skills, passions that people are discouraged from in childhood. It can be your ability to be spontaneously joyous. Have you lost that? Do you remember the last time you just broke out in a giggle or a raucous laugh just because something struck you as absurd or silly or funny? Or did you give that up in your childhood? Do you remember the last time you cried in front of another person? Or got angry? Really, just got angry. Spontaneously were yourself. Or are you a pleaser? Have you for most of your life been proud of the fact that you're a people pleaser? Are you wondering now whether there's a price to pay for continually trying to please the other? And do you think maybe you have been discouraged from being someone who can expect others to please them? Have you accepted unacceptable behavior in your life? People treating you in ways that you don't like, that are not appropriate, that are ugly or painful? Have you denied your ability to stand up and say, I don't accept unacceptable behavior. You have to treat me with the dignity that I deserve. So you see, it's not just about a career. When I play people who make their living or their life with an art, you can hear what it sounds like when they have committed to this work, which is so clearly them. But it's not just about career or work. It's about what you might have had to deny in order to get through your childhood. And I believe it may not be too late for you to recover that. Your spontaneous joy, your ability to stand up for yourself, your unwillingness to accept unacceptable behavior, your reluctance to please just for the sake of it, it may not be too late to recover the person you really are. And again, if you want to talk to me about that or read my book, you can find me on my website, and that is thelynshow.com. That's T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn.
thelinshow.com. And as I said earlier, you can email me, ask me any questions that you might have, or get a hold of the book, or listen to some of the other interviews, because all of my interviews make the same point. You, in all of the interviews, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And most of the people I interview say, you know, it's not so simple. There are downsides to what I do, but I wouldn't do anything else. Couldn't do anything else. Ask yourself if that's how you feel about your life. Now, you heard me say at the end of the interview that I was looking forward to seeing Molly. I did this interview before I saw the show, and I have seen the show now, and I want to tell you, don't miss it. The show itself is wonderful. It's hilarious. I mean, it's laugh out loud, which is always such a pleasure, but it's not just a comedy. It brings up these really significant, interesting questions, which it answers in its own way, but you might want to answer in another way. And in a few seconds, I'm going to read Sharon Leslie's review of The Smell of the Kill. And you'll hear Sharon say that she saw it earlier in another production, and at that time she was teaching for the Rhodes Scholar Organization. And she did a talk back with the group, and you'll hear some of the responses from the group. So this is a play that has everything. It's interesting, it's compelling, it's funny, thought-provoking. And it has wonderful performances, and it is wonderfully acted. Again, Sharon will allude to the fact that the other production she saw, the actors played the expression of anger too loud, too broad. In this play, everyone is so real, and that is kudos to Pamela Wiley, the director. So now I'm going to play Sharon's review of Smell of the Kill, and here it is now. Ah, the battle between the sexes is always a right place to set a story. Three couples have finished eating dinner at one of the couples' homes. The men stay in the dining room to carouse and do manly things. For female talk and to clean up, the women retire to the kitchen. You might not think this rather ordinary setup could be the beginnings of a life-altering evening for these men and women. But hold on to your seats, because playwright Michelle Lowe is about to take you on a thriller of a ride in her international sensation, The Smell of the Kill. What makes this moment in theater rare anywhere is that very few plays written by women ever get produced, and the vast majority of all theater productions are directed by men. I applaud the players for choosing the talented and experienced professional Pam Wiley to direct this production. Smell of the Kill is a black comedy that lays open the simmering and often repressed anger women can feel about being treated as second-class citizens in a male's world. The Smell of the Kill showcases the talents of three attractive women in the roles of the wives. Carrie McQueen plays the evening's simmering hostess, as the repressed Deborah is Pamela Hopkins. The ditzy Molly is played by Anna Maria Larson, who brings a charming, loving, lightheaded ditziness to her character, although we will see there is steel beneath that ditziness. I loved that Pam Wiley cast that part with an Hispanic actress. It gives the combination of women an added dimension. The playwright very cleverly keeps the husbands unseen. We only hear their voices from offstage. The women share intimacies and nip at each other as they discuss the tugs and pulls of career and motherhood and marital relations. Over the course of the evening, each woman reveals a seismic rift in her marriage. First, we hear about Nikki, mother of an infant whom we hear crying intermittently over a transmitter she has in the kitchen. Her demanding husband, Jay, orders her around abusively. Jay has been indicted for embezzling and will probably go to prison for an extended time. Nikki is being publicly humiliated by his actions and taken advantage of momentarily. Jay used Nikki's savings to build a walk-in cooler for the game meat killed in his hunting expeditions. That plays a big part in the story. Then there's Molly.
She has an overbearing husband who crushes her with attention, yelling from the dining room how much he loves her. While this initially seems endearing, we learn that it has more of the hallmarks of an obsessive-compulsive. Danny is a marital stalker. Molly wants children, but her husband is so possessive that he has quit having sex with her so he won't have to share her with a child. Molly has rebelled by having a string of lovers and is in the midst of a torrid affair. Of the three, Deborah is considered the smartest, but Deborah has given up her successful real estate career to raise her son. But from the beginning, we are privy to her husband Marty's reputation as a womanizer and his offensive sexual advances with Nikki under the dining room table while his wife, Deborah, is still sitting there. When a loud banging begins under the kitchen floor, the girlfriends discover that their husbands have unwittingly gotten locked in the meat cooler. It's 15 degrees. Nikki finds the key, but she and Molly agree that perhaps they should leave the door shut. Deborah is horrified by her friends. In desperation, Deborah lies on the floor calling out Marty's name. All three must unanimously agree if the door is to remain locked. The women comically debate this. Since I have seen two fairly different takes on the play, I must say I like the choices Pam Wiley made with how the women were played. The air is lighter, the comedy more punched, and the anger less emphasized. The pacing is quick. She moved the actors around the stage well, and the women as victim card has a light touch. It felt like a real after-dinner moment where alcohol can bring out truths not yet verbalized. These actors seem real and less studied, which lent a believability to the happenings. I remember an unending anger from the women in the Oslo production that finally got uncomfortable. Kudos to set designer Jeffrey Weber. I'd love to have the kitchen displayed on stage. The costumes by Kayleen McCaw gave the piece a crisp yet sexy contemporary flavor. I had the opportunity to see this play when it was performed at the Oslo Repertory Theater about 10 years ago. I led a talkback session with an adult education class. What an education I got listening to the strong opinions and fear this piece awoke in the husbands in the room while observing some of the smug looks on the women's faces. During the talkback, numerous men said, "The women were scary. They didn't like the play. It wasn't funny." And most of the men were repelled by the anger they felt from the female characters. One man's comment after the show was, "I wonder what my wife would decide. I'm not sure what her decision would be." Yet the women in the class mostly saw it as a comedy. They thought it was funny. They rather liked the virtual reality of getting back at the wrongs of the husband. Most of the women mentioned how badly treated the wives were and how the men in some ways deserved what they got. Lots of the men did not think the men in the stage were behaving particularly badly. Ah, the double standard rears its head. For myself, I think it's about time a story like this was written. Bullying is in the headlines. Victimization is ugly no matter who is the perpetrator. And beware when the victims decide to fight back. There is an adage in martial arts that your opponent doesn't respect you until you have landed a blow. In The Smell of the Kill, the blow is landed. Besides a place of entertainment, the ancient Greeks believed theater was a marvelous stage on which to teach ethics and standards of behavior. So, what is the moral to be learned from The Smell of the Kill? For both men and women, kindness and compassion is always the better choice. The Smell of the Kill is a very interesting and entertaining production. Go with a significant other. It's fun to find out how you might see the exact same thing differently. Well, having listened to Anna Maria, or Molly, and having heard Sharon Leslie's review, and knowing that I think that this is a play you really should not miss. Even if it's only just to see Anna Maria as Molly. As she said, and that, you know, as is clear, the part was not written for an Hispanic actor. It's supposed to be three Anglos. But it's so perfect. It was such a great choice that Pam made in hiring Anna Maria.
And she brings just an entirely new and exciting energy to the piece. So I hope that you get a chance to see that. And now, as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use. Something that you learned that you didn't know, something that you knew but had forgotten, something that tickled you, made you laugh, something that inspired you, made you look at your own life in a new way, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't